level of violence, Sister Zainab, over there. Okay, so what's your take on that?
Yes, obviously, I'm sure that many people have actually viewed these obviously satellite images that are going around. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there was a 500-day siege on the city, a town called El Fasher.
Yeah, Fasher.
And obviously, even Western sort of commentators are saying that this is genocide. So I think it was Canada's former ambassador to Sudan. His name is Nicholas Coughlin. Said that genocide is unfolding, and he actually said that it's not being forgotten, but it's deliberately marginalised. But obviously now everyone is able to view these images. And they're actually, some of the Western commentators are actually comparing the scale of this genocide just because of these images, that it must be like Rwanda. Mm-hmm. And obviously all of us probably, when we hear the word Rwanda, we just think of horrible, the most abhorrent genocide. Even obviously now, even at the moment still, we've got the big genocide on, still happening in Gaza, for example. Mm-hmm. But obviously, and just going back to obviously what Sheikh Latifi said, these things happen, of course. So if a country decides to stand against the West, so if it's a small, unimportant country that doesn't really do much, but just is against the Zionists and the Western regimes, fair enough. But this country, Sudan, is obviously one of Africa's richest countries in terms of natural resources. It's one of the world's top countries for gold, for sesame, peanuts. And obviously, as Sheikh said, just the way Syria actually is, had probably now destroyed very fertile agricultural land. Mm-hmm. This is the same in Sudan. So it's this fight over the resources. And we must draw attention, and we must mention UAE, what the UAE is doing. And obviously we've even got sort of Canadian companies, I think, who actually also have, what would we call them, manufacturing houses are actually based in the UAE. And even so, Canadian companies are manufacturing arms for the RSF? I forget their name.
Yes.
And then also I've read that the UK is obviously delivering arms to UAE, which will then go on to this. So it's the same thing that is happening in Gaza. You know, the West, which has its arms industries, mm-hmm. is happily sending everything there. Mm-hmm. Again, especially now, full knowledge of what genocide is unfolding.
Yeah, talking about the full knowledge, there's this humanitarian research lab in Yale University. Uh-huh. And I was listening to a person from there, nice guy, talking, and he said that from 2023, we have been warning the U.S. government that from the satellite imagery and the analysis that we have, something bad is going to happen. Mm-hmm. So he said, so far we have issued 60 warnings. Mm-hmm. Every month, two warnings to the U.S. Secretary of State and everything, international relations, that take care of what is going on with RSF. But they have turned a blind eye completely, mm-hmm. to the point that this person from Yale University, gentleman, academic, said, we finished our contract with the government.
All right.
And I would say that this is very naive from an American citizen to think that his government is caring about human rights.
Okay.
And he was questioning why our government is turning a blind eye over RSF. Mm-hmm. Because RSF is doing what it's doing in line with the American interests. Mm-hmm. Like the way Saddam was gassing Iranians, and U.S. would not do anything, waiting for the right time. Just when everybody there gets killed, and then we go there and get the
Halabja crisis. You're talking about.
So this is what they do. So RSF is the ISIS in Sudan. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Something that was created initially for something else, it turned into something else. But all the way along, the U.S. is just monitoring the situation, and these people are telling, "Okay, do something." Stop. Tell UAE. When that gentleman said, "Okay," the anchor asked him, "Okay, what should we do?" He said, UAE is the ally of U.S. U.S. can tell UAE, okay, stop funding these people. Mm-hmm. But again, this is naive from this, because they have this pattern repeating itself to destabilize flourishing nations in the region, mm-hmm. especially if they are anti-Zionist. And
is it so? I mean, the volunteers over there and the groups that are talking are really anti-Zionist?
The background is this.
Uh-huh, okay.
Like, maybe now, no.
Okay.
like Syria.
But the UAE supporters are not for sure.
No. They are in line.
That's right.
This is actually what, you know, the central government, when they failed, when you had the divide, South Sudan, North Sudan,
yes.
They accepted this. They accepted the normalization with Israel. All of these they accepted.
Okay.
But the sanctions were not lifted.
Uh-huh.
Why? Because U.S. is not going to lose its leverage against nations.
All right.
Okay. The leverage is, even if you're allies with the U.S., U.S. always reserves some leverage against you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, no, these RSF, they don't have anything against Israel. But because the central government had this background, they don't want Sudan to be independent.
All right.
Powerful.
That's right. So, as you said, the RSF controls many, we can say,
The western part, Darfur and Al-Fashir, yes.
The gold parts, you know.
Yes.
And these lucrative gold, we can say, mines are really important over here because both groups try to have control over there.
Yes, there's this record that says, 40% or some of the gold that is sold in by UAEA,
mm-hmm.
okay, is not registered.
Oh.
To being bought from normal markets.
Normal markets.
It comes from Sudan.
You mean illegal?
Yes. So somebody in the UK had done this research that this gold that comes from there, at least 40% of it, maybe even more has been with the laundry that they do, okay? Gold laundry. Maybe they more. But at least 40% of it is just coming from the black market there.
That's right. From the smuggling routes, you call it. That's right. All right. Okay. So in terms of the humanitarian aid or something, does anyone do anything for these people over there, Sister Zainab?
I haven't even been aware of that. I haven't seen anything in the news about that happening. I think this
because they are silent, you know, when you look at the mainstream media, mostly they are silent.
But what is happening, obviously, it's the same sort of propaganda. I can't call it war, but the same propaganda is happening about Sudan that was happening and still going on, even with regard to Gaza.
Yes.
So, for example, and we know that UAE, which is basically aligned with the Zionists and which many Western governments support because they have such close ties with the UAE, they're obviously portraying, for example, the army of Sudan. They're calling it the Hamas of Africa because they want to sort of somehow justify what they're doing. They want to create this strange
these
image
labels
again.
They use whenever they like.
Okay.
After the project's finished, they bring that guy, like they would use label of terrorist for Al-Qaeda.
Yes.
And now you see the Al-Qaeda guy in White House.
Yeah, in White House, yeah.
These labels, they have a function.
Yesterday, $10,000 for his head, and now he is welcomed, and all sanctions are removed. And this is a funny irony of the modern world. In front of the eyes of everybody, recorded history, you know, you could see that. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, West, for showing your true faith through a good president to us. And thank you very much. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Sheikh Hussein, to you for a nice elaboration, and Sister Zainab for a nice elaboration. What's taking place in Sudan is really harsh. You know, we can call second Palestine or second Syria or something, you know. But every day, footsteps of the West are over there. We can't say what is over there is violence, what is over there is destruction and atrocity. And this is the legacy of the West everywhere. Thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website, iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
I know that you could easily take away everything you've given me. And I try to remember not to take anything for granted. 'Cause I know that one day, suddenly, this will all come to an end. So my last wish is for you to be pleased with me.
It's so hard for an innocent angel to breathe on the earth far from heaven. But for my angel, it was much harder to see me lost in the fire.
تسببوا بخسائر استراتيجية على المدى.
But do you know in America who carries the pain of Agent Orange? The veterans who serve. The veterans feel responsible. Our fathers felt responsible. Even for in Vietnam, I mean, they felt responsible. The soldier, not the chemical companies or the government that made the decisions.
So my father felt extreme guilt. He felt like he had caused my birth defects. He had told my mother that every time he looked at me, he felt that it was his responsibility. He had caused this to me. And that's a major problem in the United States, trying to work through the Agent Orange issue, is that the veterans feel extreme guilt.
The man that my mom knew from the time she was four did not come home from Vietnam. He's still wandering around in the jungle somewhere. He came home a very angry man, very sad man.
My dad was... he was suffering more and more from his PTSD. He was having other health issues, and he was getting weak, and he couldn't do the things that he could do before, and his health was just going downhill.
My father lost his arm before he chose to have children. He lost his arm during the war. And then it took him 7 years to cope with that and feel that maybe he was mentally able to help raise a child.
The things that he had seen, he would always have flashbacks, and he suffered from PTSD really bad from all the things that he did and saw while he was in the war. And he was very abusive and he was very violent, and he would black out at times and think that he was still in the war. And there was times like we would get up in the middle of the night, me and my brother, and we would try to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, and he would be like hiding under our beds and grab our feet and pull us under the beds. And I mean, he had PTSD really bad.
He suffered flashbacks, lots of flashbacks. Many nights he'd wake up moaning and groaning, screaming and yelling in his sleep.
They would put him in the helicopters and stuff, and they would fly him all over and drop him off in the jungle, and they would get out of the helicopters, and the helicopters would leave him out there, and there would only be like maybe 30 guys. They were hiding everywhere, and you couldn't really run through the jungle because everything was booby-trapped, and there was pits with the spikes in them and landmines everywhere and trip wires, and they had these big logs that had a bunch of bamboo spikes on them, and they'd put them up in the trees. So when you'd walk by and you'd trip a stick or whatever, it would fall down out of the tree and impale people. And there was, he said there was times that while they were on the battlefield that he would have to go and like his friend would be walking right in front of him, and he would step on a landmine and pieces of his friend would fly all over him, and he would have to pick up the pieces and put them in his backpack and carry them out.
He spent a lot of time by himself, very quiet. We were raised with war decor in our home, lots of Vietnam memorabilia, pictures and videos and books and that sort of thing. So it was always around us, and we always knew what had happened to our father. We never knew him any other way, so we always knew what had happened to him.
He just couldn't take it anymore. He tried to drink the pain away. He tried to work it away. He tried to tell me and my brother everything that he went through. He tried talking about it. He tried everything. When he first got there and everything, he was just out of high school, and what he encountered when he got over there was not what he expected at all. One of the missions that he had got sent on when he first got here was that they went into a village, and the whole time I've been here, I've been trying to ask people and everything. And the other day, we were at another VAVA office, and we were there with the general. And when he started to open the book, it was mentioned that my father was in Chu Lai. Everybody that was in there said, "Oh, Chu Lai." And it kind of made me start to think, well, what went on in Chu Lai that was so bad that everybody knows about it? And he was explaining all that. But then when he found Chu Lai on the map, he pointed at it, and he cried and shut the book and pushed it away from him. And that really hit home, because that's where my dad was at. And then when we got to the museum and I found where his company and everything was at, and I saw it on the wall, and I saw where they slaughtered all them women and children.
Thank you.
And my dad was only 19 years old when he joined the military, when he came to Vietnam. So at 19 years old, that's what they told him to do. And they made him kill women and children. There was like 500 of them. It wasn't like just one or two or three. It was 500 women and children. And like 70-something of those women were pregnant. So they killed the babies too. And that was the first week that my dad was here. And then he still had 13 more months to go after he had to do that. And he had to go through, I don't even know how many villages they dropped him off at, that they had to do the same thing, because that's when, during the war, it turned into basically a genocide, and everything that was out there, they killed it. Men, women, children, babies, dogs, cats, pigs, everything. They just went out there and they killed everything that they came in contact with.
My father felt pride in the sense that he followed directions, that he did what he was supposed to do. However, he harbored a lot of guilt for many, many years about the things that had happened here during his time, and the things that he was told to do, the things that he had to do in order to survive. He had terrible nightmares.
This temple represents the names of the people who died in this area during the war. On these slabs here, it talks about all the names of those who died, some without record of their birth date, but just their date of their passing. You can find very young people's names here, and very old people, men and women, babies, you know, just very young to very old.
The other part of that story is that the Vietnam veterans in general were shunned by, you know, World War II veterans and Korean War veterans and things. They were not accepted when they came home by the very people they wanted to emulate. American Legions and stuff, because they didn't win the war, they weren't real soldiers, and they didn't have a place there with the real military heroes. You're from Vietnam, and they smoke, and they, you know, do drugs, and they kill people, so they're bad.
I know of twice that he had tried to kill himself, and the second time that it happened, it was Christmas, and he was having a really tough time. Christmas was very difficult for him. All of his family was already gone, and then just with the PTSD, he had taken a gun and had loaded it, and thankfully had put the wrong bullet in the gun. And so when he put the gun to his head and he fired it, it misfired, and it didn't go off. But we knew about that story, and that was always something that we had feared, that he would take his own life.
I got a ride from my dad, and I went back to the state of California. It was Father's Day of 1997. I was coming home, and when I got to the house, I noticed there was a bunch of police cars outside of my house, and I thought maybe somebody had hurt somebody in my family, or maybe I was in trouble or something. I didn't know, so I hurried up, and I pulled in the driveway, and I asked them what was going on, and they said that they needed to talk to me. So I went to the side with them, and I started to talk to them, and they told me that there was some people that were riding some motorcycles, and they had found my dad's body out in the middle of the desert in his car, and that he had committed suicide. And it was so hard for me because all my life my dad was always there. He always tried to help me. He helped take care of me. He helped make sure that I had my prosthetic legs and everything. And just all of a sudden, all at once, all of that was gone.
This war in Vietnam, guess what? It wasn't going like the other wars that the United States had been involved in. They think the idea that, you know, maybe America didn't win like they thought they were going to, or that there was subversive reasons for us getting into the conflict or the war itself, that America mismanaged their military, or they were after natural resources, or they just wanted land close to China. There is so much controversy just around those parameters.
The people actually got to see the war on TV. It was broadcast. They showed all the people that were getting blown up and all the kids that were getting sprayed and all the death and destruction of what the war was actually had going on in it. And once the American people saw how awful war really is, because most of the time in America, because nobody attacks America on their own soil or anything like that.
General, how would you assess yesterday's activities and today's? What is the enemy doing? Are these major attacks or...
This is the main Vietnamese language radio station in Saigon.
6-6-1, that order to get the snipers out. When the American people saw this, they started having riots in the street. They started protesting at the government. They started, like, just having all kinds of problems in the United States over it.
So many years after 1975 that it's still in infancy. Like, I don't think historians even know what to write about it. I don't think they know what's real. I don't think they know what's false about it, what's mythological about it, anything. I think at first it came out of the veteran's mouth, my kids are sick, I'm sick, and they said, guess what? You're just a bunch of baby killers. You're just a bunch of whiners. You're a bunch of drug addicts. Now you just want a free handout. That's what they were met with.
Agent Orange was a safe product when it was used in the Vietnam War, and it's a safe product today.
We don't mean to say that there isn't an Agent Orange effect, but at this point in time, we don't seem to see anything that confirms that there's something there specifically.
Just hours before, thousands of Vietnam veterans were supposed to be represented in court against seven chemical companies. There was an out-of-court settlement.
Many of my brothers have died. Well, you sat up there and played political.
Gentlemen, we can't wait 20, 30, 40 years.
I think they just try to sweep it under the rug so nobody knows, so that people won't be trying to go, well, wait a minute, I have a bad liver, or wait a minute, I have a brother that's missing an arm and we've never had birth defects in our family, or wait a minute, now I know why you don't have any legs, and all that. And then for all the people to come together and sue the chemical company, I think that's what their issue is. I think they don't want everybody to know about the Agent Orange, because if everybody knew how awful it was, and that the government, they would have to pay for medical bills and all kinds of stuff, and they don't want to do that, so they try to hide it and pretend like it never happened.
It's just still on the cusp. It's just out on the edge. Nobody will take it and pull it in. Very famous actor in the United States, Tom Hanks, currently doing the 60s. It's a documentary series that's been showing on CNN. I waited on bated breath. You know, he's talking about the 60s and the Vietnam War and showing film and how it affected. I was waiting. Come on. Nothing. I went to a speech with journalists who were here during the war, who weren't in the military but were journalists, very famous journalists in Pittsburgh a couple months ago. I waited. Come on, something, say something. Sorry. It makes me so angry. They just erase our history. They erase it, it's gone. It doesn't exist. They don't care. And that has been what we've heard our entire lives. You're controversialist. You just want controversy. You're just making stuff up. No, it's happened. They talked about everything. They talked about the strife. They talked about this and that and what it was like to be here and how the troops were and what it was like in the... Say something. You come here as a journalist and you stayed in Vietnam. You were able to see both sides of the story. And you've been back to Vietnam. And you talk about it. Say something. You know that the children here are still suffering. You know that the Vietnam vets are suffering. Say something, nobody. You have people who are suffering, who have suffered their entire lives because of decisions people made in an office somewhere. They made the decision to spray this stuff. This is going to be a good idea. We're going to save people. People still today claim Agent Orange saved people. Okay, maybe it did. But those lives were worthwhile, and I don't diminish that at all. But there are millions of us that are suffering because of this chemical.
Seeing that these people have taken me in, like when we went to the Friendship Village and those Vietnamese veterans that came out, they were the NVA. They were the ones that were at war with my dad. And my dad probably shot at some of them, and some of them probably shot at my dad. And when I came face to face with those guys, that was a pretty intense moment because I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if all of a sudden they were gonna have a flashback because they saw an American face, or I just had no idea what to expect. But after he sat there and looked at me in my eyes for a good minute, and he came over there and he gave me a big hug, and he told me that Vietnam doesn't want war. They don't want to hate the American people, that they just want to live in peace from now on. And
now that I've come and I've been able to put faces, it's been a wonderful experience to get the second side of the story. Every conflict, every problem has two sides. I'd been raised with one side of the story, now I've gotten the second side of the story, and now I can take both those elements and put them together and formulate something to share with my children.
Just like my dad, I'm not going to lie about things when I get back to the United States and try to make it look nice or do anything. All my friends and family and stuff, I'm going to tell them how my trip was.
Once I came to Vietnam,
I said, okay, this is more. This is more. This is bigger. This is bigger than Heather. Because a lot of my life was trying to deal with what happened to me. And when I came here and understood that the problem was way, way, way bigger than just me, or just a few of the kids that I had kind of connected with in the United States, I understood that I couldn't go back to just thinking of me and my story and my problems and those things. I knew I had to do more.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
We once had a teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures.
In the name of Allah. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program, The Teacher. Please stay with us.
What will we say in front of it?
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an analysis on the most important Islamic teachings. I am Atta, the host of this program, Sheikh Danish and Sheikh Fadai. Two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom are in today's studio. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh Danish. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you.
And Sheikh Fadai, assalamu alaikum to you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
So, how are you doing, Sheikh Fadai?
Thank you. Thank
and
you.
Sheikh Danish, what about you?
Alhamdulillah.
Thank you. Thank you very much for accepting my invitation. All right, for today's episode of the program, The Future, we want to talk about Al-Baghiyatu Salihat, and that is literally can be translated into English as lasting righteous deeds. This is also a Quranic term, and this refers to the good deeds whose rewards endure in the afterlife. So, we call it Baghiyat, those things will remain, Salihat, good deeds. In fact, these are the effects that will be lasting, or the positive effects of our good deeds, which will be lasting, inshallah, for our afterlife. All right, so, Sheikh Danish, let's start with you this episode again. So, what is Baghiyatu Salihat? Does it start in this world or no, afterlife? I mean, as soon as we are dead, you know, the counting for the good deeds of, we can say, the effects of our good deeds starts when we die. Mm-hmm. Where does it start?
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Another Quranic topic,
yes.
Something that we should pay attention to, inshallah. In our daily lives. Is the concept of Baqiyat al-Salihat. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, the Holy Quran speaks about this topic in two of the verses of the Holy Quran. This is mentioned. One is the mention in Surah Al-Kahf, verse number 46, where it says that Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Al-Malu wal-Banun, Zinatul Hayat al-Dunya.
All right.
وَالْبَاقِيَاتُ الصَّالِحَاتُ خَيْرٌ إِنْدَ رَبِّكَ ثَوَابًا وَخَيْرٌ أَمَلًا. Right? So it speaks about the things that people crave for this world, or they are considered the ornaments of this world. And these are the wealth of a person or the children and his progeny.
Yes.
They are considered the something that people consider as the ornaments of this world.
Okay.
But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is telling us in the Holy Quran that Baqiyat al-Salihat, those righteous deeds that you perform, are even better in the eyes of Allah.
Uh-huh.
In the Rabbika, Sawaban, because of the reward that they entail, and also the hope that you should have from these things. So we as human beings have hopes from our wealth that it will come and save us in times of difficulty.
That's right.
We have hope from our children.
Mm-hmm.
But the real hope that we should have as mu'mineen, as believers, is from our good deeds and the righteous deeds. Because
mm-hmm.
this is what takes us closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And this is where the real reward lies.
That's right.
And so Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is basically changing the perspective
mm-hmm.
of the believers.
Mm-hmm.
That you should have hope from your good deeds.
All
and
right.
you should have a better trust in your good deeds as compared to any other thing
right.
that has been given to you by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Okay. Sheikh Fadai, what about Quranic ayahs and references? Is this term, Baghiyatu Salaha, the very word, I mean this term, is mentioned in the Holy Quran or not? And if yes, what does it mean over there?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We have different verses for this phenomenon, Baghiyatu Salahat, or this meaning,
yes.
this issue. Some of the verses mention the word exactly,
mm-hmm.
Baghiyatu Salahat, as my brother recited the verse. And some other verses, you cannot find the word Baghiyatu Salahat, but you can find explanation about that. That what is the philosophy of Baghiyatu Salahat? What should we have this kinds of action
mm-hmm.
in order to help us in the other world? I want to recite another word without the literal noticing the word of Baghiyatu Salahat. We have in Surah Mu'minun, verse 99 and 100, حَتَّى إِذَا جَاءَ أَحَدُمُ الْمَوْتِ قَالَ رَبِّ ارْجِعُونَ. When the angel of death comes to the one to take the soul, they call the angel and ask the angel, let us get back.
Mm-hmm.
Give us the permission to
get back to
get
life.
Get back to the life. لَعَلِّي أَعْمَلُ صَالِحًا. In order to do some salih deed,
righteous
means good, righteous deed. That is Baghiyatu Salah.
All right.
فِيمَا تَرَكْتُ, the deeds that I didn't do,
uh-huh.
the action that I
that
forgot
I missed.
To do,
that's right.
I missed.
That's right.
And what is the answer? The answer is that كَلَّا, no. إِنَّهَا كَلِمَةٌ هُوَ قَائِلُهُ. It's just the word that you're talking. You're just talking. You're not the man of action.
Mm-hmm.
You could do, you had the opportunity to do salih action, righteous deed, but now you just want to find excuses. وَمِنْ وَرَائِهِمْ بَرْزَخٌ إِلَىٰ يَوْمِ يُبْعَثُونَ. And the other stage, the next stage, is the barzakh, barzakhi hayat,
all right.
which is a kind of hell or heaven in barzakh, and then
mm-hmm.
in the real hell. So, you know, this salih, salihat, amal salih, or righteous deed, is something that we wish, if only I did that. So we can do that here
all
when
right.
we are alive. We have a hadith interpreting this verse that the imam said, مَنْ سَنَّ سُنَّةً حَسَنَةً عُمِلَ بِهَا مِنْ بَعْدِهِ كَانَ لَهُ أَجْرُهُ وَمِثْلُ أُجُورِهِمْ مِنْ غَيْرَ أَنْ يُنْغَسَ مِنْ أُجُورِهِمْ شَيْئًا. If you make and create some good tradition that people act according to that tradition,
mm-hmm.
a custom, a tradition,
yes.
that people act, for example, like we call it today, a mode, a fashion.
All right.
Anyway, a good one
uh-huh.
that people act according to that, God will give you the reward, sawab, and all the people
uh-huh.
without decreasing from your sawab.
That's right.
وَمَنْ سَنَّ سُنَّةً سَيِّئَةً فَعُمِلَ بِهَا بَعْدَهُ كَانَ عَلَيْهِ وِزْرُهُ وَمِثْلَ أَوْزَارِهِ مِنْ غَيْرَ أَنْ يَنْقُسَ شَيْئًا مِنْ عَجْزِ. And if you create and make and institute
uh-huh.
a bad custom or tradition, a bad fashion,
all right.
and people act according to that,
uh-huh.
you will have all the sins of people without decreasing from yours or theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So when we are dead, not just but we have, you know, what is the adjective Baghiyatu Salihat?
I know what you mean.
The one that we put here after ourselves,
yes.
that which is good one.
Which is
what
good
does it mean? It means
yes.
that we have Baghiyatu Khair Salihat.
Khair Salihat,
something
too,
that
right.
we keep here, but it is not good one.
Mm-hmm.
Let me clarify that. With
you mean
an
the evil? The evil deeds can be remaining to you.
People are acting according
and
to that.
Acting, that's right.
For example, if someone is in a jail, he himself cannot do anything to free himself,
yes,
to save himself. But if he has some good relatives out of the jail,
yes.
they can help him, for
Very
example,
okay.
to give money for his death.
Okay, that's right.
You know, death is like that. When we die, our profile of action is closed.
Uh-huh.
We cannot do any action.
Mm-hmm.
But if we have some Baghiyat Salah here,
yes.
it means something that is working
yes.
in that world.
All right.
I'm not in that world.
And in our remembrance.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
For example, I have a good children. I make
charity making, you know. Or, for example, some people are after holding some majalis for Imam al-Hussein, you
yes.
know. And, you know, for example, in their last will and testament, they write down that all the money that is, for example, out of my factory or company or this or that must be spent, some of that, half of that or something, for Imam al-Hussein's majalis, okay? So, I mean, we are dead. But as you said, the institution, the foundation that we created in this world, it could be small, it could be big, okay?
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
Before getting to Sheikh Fadai and the Hadith, you know, I'll be happy with you to talk a little bit more about for us about Baghiyat Salahat exactly. Okay, what is it exactly? What to do in order to have the good effects of some righteous deeds? Because, you know, we do our obligations, we do Salah, we fasting, okay? But when we are dead, for sure we cannot do that. But it seems that there are some deeds that continue, okay? They are not Salah. They are not fasting, they are not Hajj, they are not pilgrimage to Karbala or something, but their effects are going to be continued, and this is really outstanding.
Yes, so as we studied from the verses of the Holy Quran, the traditions of the Holy Prophet that my friend will also mention, we see that one of the meanings of Baqiyat Salihat is what the Mufassirin or the Ulama of the Holy Quran mention, or in the verses of the Holy Quran, the verse that was cited, Surah Kehf, verse number 46, it says, all the good deeds of a person are baqiyat as-salihah,
mm-hmm.
right? So from the Quranic concept, we get this concept that everything that you do is according to the wajibat, staying away from
right.
the muharramat is baqiyat as-salihah. But in the concept that has grown in the minds of people regarding Baqiyat al-Salihat, and even some scholars of Akhlaq and some of the other scholars have also mentioned this, that those things that even after your death, their reward will reach you.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been mentioned that there are certain things, for example, waqf, that you put something in trust, put a holy Quran as a trust in the mosque
yes.
near your place.
Yes.
And everybody who reads it
uh-huh.
and benefits from that holy Quran, that reward will also reach you, even
uh-huh.
after your death, right? This is the concept of sadaqa jariya,
yes.
right? So if you write something about
well,
aqaid...
We can find
yes.
some papers or books,
yes.
the we can say the shortened Quran or something
yes.
like that, or
and
the
even
supplications.
About a concept
yes.
in belief, even this program,
uh-huh.
right?
Okay, okay.
This
inshallah.
Program that we are doing,
inshallah,
millions and millions of people are going to listen to
inshallah.
This, inshallah, in
inshallah.
The future. And benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
So even after the death of a person, this is going to benefit them. This is the concept that has grown in the minds of ordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
But as we see that there are two sorts of concepts that we are playing here with. One is the concept of the Holy Quran, that everything, every good deed that you perform is near Allah. It is saved and you will see the effects of it on the day of judgment and
yes.
in the future. But sadaqa jariya and all those things that bring sadaqa jariya is also considered baqiyat as-salah.
Okay. That's right. Okay, that's it. Even building, for example, a hospital or a clinic, okay? For example, in the holy city of Qom, there are some centers.
Yeah.
For example, Ayatollah Golpaygani Hospital, okay? So, or for example, Baghiyat Allah Clinic, okay, after the late Sheikh Mirza Jawad Tabrizi, okay? So these were the donators, you know, who donated some parts of the alms or some parts of the donations coming to their offices, or we can't say there are also so many other people, good people, benevolent people who give charity, found a school or hospital or something like that, so that the future generation might benefit. All right, let's now get to your hadith and seven important tips for Baghiyat al-Salah. Sheikh Badai.
Yes. Before reciting this hadith, I want to explain more about what you said.
All right.
You said that to making a hospital, building a clinic.
All right.
You know, we have our wealth in this world in order to benefit from our wealth.
Yes.
But I don't know whether you heard or not, in the ancient Egyptian civilization,
yes,
the kings and pharaohs were used to be buried,
yeah,
by the gold.
Yeah. They used to build their wells with themselves. That's right.
They imagined, they believed that they could take their wealth to the other world.
Uh-huh.
But
that was their Baghiyat al-Salah. Okay.
You know, it's a kind of joke.
All right.
But I want to say that it is possible to take your wealth to the other world. How? When you spend that wealth on Baghiyat al-Salah, you are taking your wealth to the other world.
Mm-hmm.
But when you spend it for yourself, for your joy, you're just destroying that wealth. Because you're eternal being. You're spending your wealth for just 70 or 80 years old, and you don't leave anything for that millions of years of age after your death.
Mm-hmm.
So let's leave something after our death in order to use. Let's take our wealth to the other world.
Okay.
For example, the hadith that I wanted to mention from Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, he said, سَبْعَةُ أَسْبَابٍ يُكْتَبُ لِلْعَبْ سَوَابُهَا بَعْدَ وَفَاتِهِ. There are seven things that God will give you reward even after your death. The first one, رَجُلٌ غَرَسَ نَخْلًا, planting a tree. It is mentioned نَخْل, palm, but it's not just
a palm tree, that's
restricted
right.
to palm.
Any greenery.
Yes.
Okay, that's right.
Planting a green area or trees so people can use it.
Can benefit, that's right.
أَوْ حَفَرَ بِئْرًا أَوْ أَجْرَ نَهْرًا, digging a well or a spring, or
spring
making
water,
some
right.
kind of river so people can use the water.
Very good.
Or bana masjidan, building a mosque so people can worship in that.
Very good.
Aw kataba mushafan, writing a book, a useful book, a beneficial one.
That's right.
You know, nowadays we have article, books, I don't know, encyclopedia. All of them are the examples of this.
Okay, but the good ones, you mean?
The good ones.
That's right. Okay.
The beneficial ones.
That's for the people.
I write
right.
a book or article or make a site, make an encyclopedia so people can benefit from that.
Very good.
The one is dead, but people are using that site or that book or that article. You can take their thawab. أَوَرَّثَ عِلْمًا, leave a science as your legacy.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a scientist, like, for example, Martyr Fakhrizadeh, Shahid Fakhrizadeh,
yes.
that we had in yes. our nuclear science. He was a scientist, and now we are benefiting his science
yes.
as a kind of legacy, scientific legacy.
Shahid Tehrani Mogaddam, yes. the father of the missile defense in Iran.
So,
that's right. Okay.
Scientific legacy. You know, now look at our prophet.
Uh-huh.
14 centuries ago,
yes.
talking about scientific legacy.
All right.
أَوْ خَلَّفَ وَلَدًا صَالِحًا يَسْتَغْفَرَ لَهُ بَعْدَ وَفَاتِهِ. Leave a good child after your death who do istighfar for you by the word or by the action.
Very good.
When my child leaves after me, by his good actions or her good actions, people will pray for me. People will pray for the fathers and mothers. What a good child they trained, that we are benefiting his action. So these are Baghiyat al-Salah, the main examples of Baghiyat. So it is easy for us. We can take our wealth, take our action to the other world. But now, in the other world, we cannot act.
That's right.
But we cannot benefit from our previous actions.
Okay, that's right. Holding majalis for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam is another one. You know, there are so many people who we can't say give donations, building stations or mawaqif, for example, in the Arba'in Walk. There are so many people in Iraq now, okay, or from other countries, okay, who order the children after their death, you know, you have to continue the path of your father, okay? And this is the path of the fathers and the mothers to be continued. held image Alice for the Ayyamas and Imam al Hussein.
Can I add a point? Short point.
Okay, short point. That's
let's
right.
think about the opposite side.
Uh-huh.
Not to make a wrong mode and fashion for people.
Yes.
So the scene will get us in the other
I know what
world.
You mean, yes.
Nowadays in social media.
Media, that's right.
You know, people make lots of wrong
actions,
modes and fashions
right.
that people follow okay. that wrong action even
right.
when the one is dead.
Mm-hmm.
It is the opposite side that we should
yeah.
be careful
yeah.
about that.
Okay. So that's right. We can't say innovating or creating a wrong action among the people to be continued and followed up by the future generation, you know, unfortunately, will add to your evil deeds in the other world. So let's add to our good deeds, inshallah, by doing good deeds in this world and continue it in the other world. Sheikh Fadai, thank you very much. And Sheikh Danish, thank you very much for your elaboration on the concept of Baghiyatu Salihat and positive effects that remain after our good deeds in the afterlife. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website, iranradio.ir. Also send us your questions and comments at iranradio@sinairib.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Warm salam from the heart of Tehran. Whether you're tuning in from across town or across continents, you're listening to Iran Radio, and here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholar Ibn al-Haytham, known as Al-Hazen in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. Let's take a look at what's coming up. First, it's news time. Then we move to today's special. Up next, another feature from our radio productions. Following that, don't miss Hadith of the Day. So stay with us. The news is next.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
This hour's top headlines. Iran calls on world countries to take action on Washington's anti-Venezuela measures, warning that any inaction will form a basis for widespread violations of international law. A pro-Palestinian hacking group publishes the names and photos of 11 Israelis who have been described as the architects of the regime's Iron Dome missile system. And finally, the Russian military launches a massive drone and missile strike on Ukraine, causing widespread blackouts. Moscow says it's retaliation of Ukrainian attacks inside Russia. Welcome everyone, New World News. Let's go ahead and get started with the stories that matter. Well, Iran says U.S. military threats against Venezuela are a dangerous escalation of unilateral coercion that threatens the international system.
Venezuela is a member of the non-aligned movement and a member of the UN Charter's group and is an active member of many UN organizations.